I'm going to describe a country, and I want you to tell me who I'm talking about. This is a country that keeps a database of everywhere its citizens fly, and a database of everywhere its citizens drive, and a database of everything its citizens purchase with credit cards, and a database of everything that their citizens post online, and maintains a database of 30 billion photos so that they can identify people walking down the street with facial recognition. If I describe that country, who am I talking about?
It's us, but I would say China.
Yep, 5 years ago, most people would have said China. China got the prototype. We're getting the industrial version, the production version. Welcome. I'm John Padfield. I'm a business professor, but what got me invited over here is my YouTube channel. My background is a little bit unique. I describe myself on YouTube as an engineer turned state representative turned business professor. That experience gives me some unique perspectives on what's going on in society today, particularly as it relates to surveillance infrastructure. I have just come back from touring the United States. Since last July, over the past 13 months, I have visited 29 states, giving very similar presentations to what I'm going to be sharing with you today. It's evolved over time. I have new material. But what I've been talking about is the growing surveillance infrastructure that is popping up all around us. I have some brochures in the back of the room that have all of this information on it, but whether we're talking about crotch cams, the cameras over the road that look through your windshield to look at your lap to make sure you don't have a phone, of course, some of these are being monitored in real time by a cop sitting a quarter mile down the road, but they're literally looking at your crotch as you drive under. Sometimes it's being done by AI, sometimes it's being done by humans. Then we have the flock cameras, and I'll have a lot more to say about flock in a moment. But this is the proverbial tip of the iceberg. I'm sure we've all seen the photos before of the iceberg, 10% above the surface, 90% below. I refer to flock as that 10% that's visible. And as much as I dislike the surveillance infrastructure represented by flock, this little tiny piece of me is thankful to them because they have shown people what's under the surface. And it goes on and on. Flock is not unique. Automated license plate readers, ALPRs, the very first one that we know of was built in 1972 in London. It was black and white, it was very slow, had a horrible error rate, but it traces all the way back to 1972. So we're going to be talking about these and a few other technologies. But what really got me started on this idea of wanting to get out and talk to people and share my observations about the surveillance infrastructure was last April. April of 2025, I went to my local Lowe's and I saw something that wasn't there the day before. Three flock cameras in the Lowe's parking lot. And I didn't have anything to do that day. So I left that Lowe's and I went to another Lowe's the next town over, and there were flock cameras all over the place, plus a few along the road that I had not seen before. And I kind of made a day trip out of it. I went to four small towns in southern Indiana, and every Lowe's that I went to had flock cameras in them. And I was noticing the flock cameras along the road that these are roads that I drive on two or three times a month, and I had not seen them before. It was like a bad storm came through and left litter all over the place. So this prompted me last April to make my first video about flock. And I called it One Nation Under Surveillance because these cameras are popping up absolutely everywhere. It's estimated, and this is a Forbes article that ran last September. Last September, it was estimated that flock had a little over 80,000 license plate readers up. If you go out to the DFLOC website, the DFLOC website now documents where 136 automated license plate readers are located. But that's more than just flock. About 110,000 of those 136,000 are Flock license plate readers. And what particularly struck me in the Forbes article last year was Garrett Langley, the CEO of Flock. The term delusions of grandeur comes to mind. He said it's Flock's goal to eliminate crime in the United States. Wow. We have the FBI, we have all types of Department of Treasury task force, we have counterterrorism units all over the place, we have Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, we have so many organizations that have been fighting crime for decades. And he thinks that Flock not is going to reduce crime, his words, will eliminate crime in the United States. And the reporter from Forbes, I have this on video, the reporter from Forbes asked him, how long is it going to take? And last year, Garrett Langley's answer was, 5 to 7 years. Well, that was a year ago, which means we should be 15 to 20% of the way there now. So another 4 years and we don't have to worry about crime. We will live in a crime-free society for the first time in human history because of Flock. So you know, let's give a round to Garrett Langley. I want to stress something before I go any further. I am not anti-law enforcement. I don't want to live in a society where it's absolute chaos. When I ran for state representative clear back in the 1990s, I defeated a former sheriff to win that seat. Guess who they endorsed? He was a former sheriff. He was endorsed in my first election. But when I ran for re-election, I was endorsed. And they said that my commitment to law enforcement had not gone unnoticed. More recently, I have done consulting work for law enforcement. The Marion County Sheriff's Department had some problems. This is back around 2015, 2014 or 15. But they had some internal problems. They had accidentally released some inmates, which, as odd as that sounds, it's not unique to Indianapolis. But I went in and I worked with them. I ended up doing 3 different consulting projects for the Marion County Sheriff's Department. I do not condone what's going on right now with a lot of people going out and cutting down Flock cameras. I don't want the cameras, but I want them removed because laws and judicial decisions. I want legislative and judicial victory, not vandalism. And beyond that, there is another reason that I don't want the cameras cut down. If you go out today, pick your search engine of choice, but if you go out today and do a search for Flock camera, you're gonna see one of 3 types of stories. The first stories that you're gonna see are law enforcement abuses of this technology. We have a story here. I gotta make this a little bigger on my screen. Florida police officer arrested for using Flock cameras to stalk his ex-wife 717 times. Now, Flock likes to talk about, we have tools in place. In fact, I have screenshots of what their website used to look like. And by the way, if you want to see what their website used to look like, don't bother going to the Internet Archive. Flock has blocked the Internet Archive from archiving their website. They care about their privacy. But I have screenshots that I took of their former website that said, we have a system of checks and balances that prevent this technology from being misused. I heard a couple of you as we were doing introductions talking about your role in risk management. The word prevent means stops it from ever happening. You know, we have other terms that we use if we're talking about mitigation or reducing the likelihood. But Flock didn't say it reduces the likelihood of this technology being misused. It said it prevents this technology from being misused. I think we can call that myth busted. This is the latest count. 94 documented cases of law enforcement misusing automated license plate readers, very often for stalking romantic interest, although a few more entrepreneurial police officers have found other uses for flock cameras, like competitive intelligence, selling data to a company about who's visiting their competitor's facility. That's been documented as well. But 94 cases so far, and this number is going up daily, 94 cases so far where police officers have misused this technology. I guess what I find particularly interesting, the two states that have the most frequent incidents are California and Georgia. Georgia happens to be where Flock is headquartered. So the first type of story you're going to see if you Google or DuckDuckGo or whatever search engine you use, the first type of story you're going to see about Flock cameras is how it's being misused. The second thing you're going to find is stories about innocent people being pulled over, ordered out of their car at gunpoint because of errors with license plate readers. Here's a study from Oak Park. 40% of Flock stops were mistakes. Flock claims they have 96% accuracy for character recognition. And I want to break this down real careful. Think about your license plate. The letters on your license plate are about so tall. And that is easier for a camera to read as you're running down the road at 40 or 50 or 70 mile an hour, because your plate number is about this big. What about the state? If you're from Ohio, if you're from Iowa, if you're from Indiana, those letters are about this tall. There are two different error rates. One is reading the plate number, the other is reading the plate state. Think about this for a minute. Whatever your license plate number is, there are 49 other states. How many of those other states issued the same plate number but in a different state? And if one of those people is wanted and Flock picks up your plate number, which matches the plate number of a wanted vehicle, and they just overlook the fact that, oh, you're from Ohio and the plate that's wanted is from Iowa, hey, both states have four letters in it. It's an innocent mistake. It's a risk I'm willing to take. You're going to get pulled over at gunpoint, ordered out of your car, but that doesn't really impact me. This is one of the reasons why LAPD let their contract with Flock expire. The California auditor did an audit of LAPD. They found 161 innocent stops where LAPD officers pulled over people. Now, not all of them were ordered out of their car at gunpoint, but 161 times the wrong car was pulled over because of an error with the license plate readers. So again, if you go out and do a search for Flock cameras, the first stories you're going to see is police misusing the technology, often for stalking purposes. The second type of story you're going to see is innocent people being harmed, being ordered out of their car, traumatized, forced to lay face down on the hot pavement with guns pointed at them. And the third type of story you're going to see is people out cutting down Flock cameras. I really don't want these stories competing with the other stories. Right now, I would rather people be focused on the first two. So I really encourage people to not do this. And while we're on this subject about innocent people being stopped, the Institute for Justice has been documenting all of these cases. And as I was reading through the documentation from Institute for Justice, some things started bouncing around in my mind based on my industry experience. We can go all the way back to 1931, 95 years ago. A professor by the name of Heinrich did studies on industrial accidents. This train of thought started 95 years ago. It's been refined over and over and over the past century. But here's the basic premise of Heinrich's research. He is looking at what do companies need to do to reduce employee injuries. Very legitimate question, because every now and then you'll read about an industrial accident where somebody loses their life. And he said trying to go out and eliminate that particular cause is difficult, not very productive. He came up with what he called the safety pyramid, and the base of the safety pyramid is unsafe acts. Today, an unsafe act may be a forklift driver talking on a cell phone as he's driving across a warehouse. Most of the time, nothing bad happens. Most of the time, you can drive across a warehouse without hitting anyone, even if you're on a cell phone. But it's an unsafe act. And some percentage of those unsafe acts are going to result in what's called a near miss. Somebody that the forklift driver didn't see in time has to jump out of the way to avoid being hit. That's a near miss. Nothing bad happened to them, but it's nothing bad happened because they took evasive action. Sometimes they're going to get hit, and sometimes it's going to be a minor injury, sometimes it's going to be a more serious injury, sometimes it's going to be a fatality. The whole reason I bring this up is, let's think about the modern equivalent of this pyramid. Flock is reading 20 billion with a B license plates per month. There's an error rate associated with that. So I have a base of 20 billion license plate scans, and some percentage of those, I've seen studies saying as high as 10%, are going to be misreads. Even by Flock's own numbers, they claim 96% accuracy for state, 97% accuracy for characters. You have to multiply those together. If I want a good read, I need both the state and the characters. But we're talking somewhere in the low 90% for accuracy, which means we're approaching 10% in errors. So if I'm doing 20 billion plate scans, and let's just say 5% error rate, this is being very generous. 5% error rate on 20 billion scans, that's still 1 billion misread plates. Now, most of the time, if they misread my plate, it's going to be to somebody else that is not wanted. No harm, no foul. It was misread, but it didn't result in anything bad happening. But some percentage of the time, it's going to send out an alert to law enforcement saying that plate is wanted, that car is stolen. And again, not every one of those is going to turn into something bad, because hopefully, when the police officer pulls up behind me and reads my plate, they're going to say, wait a minute, that doesn't match what my computer says. This is an AI error, and they're going to let me go. They're not going to pull me over. But we are seeing an increasing number of cases where police officers are believing what's on the computer screen rather than what they can see with their own eyes. They're pulling somebody over, and now we're into a situation where in some cases, three or four responding officers draw guns on the occupants of a car. And this does not, I will not gloat when I'm proven right, but I will tell you right now, if we don't rein this in and rein this in quickly, it's only a matter of time until somebody gets shot. When three officers are pointing guns at someone, believing that person is a wanted criminal, and that person goes to pull out their wallet, trying to be cooperative, furtive movements. I thought he was going for a gun. It's happened before, it will happen again. I want to go over another claim that Flock makes, and I always hesitate to go here because I think there are constitutional problems, and if there are constitutional problems with surveillance, the efficacy of the surveillance really shouldn't matter. But because people that are pushing on the Constitution saying, well, we have to find a compromise between privacy and safety, they keep bringing up this idea that these cameras are making us safer. Is that true? I've started my own research on this, and I have gone out looking at published research, recently published research, as in July 2026. But here's what Flock claims on their website. I want to read this directly from Flock's website, and I wrote this down just last night, or I took this screenshot just last night. "42% of Flock customers recovered more than 50%, more than half, of the stolen vehicles in their jurisdiction." Let that sink in for a minute. This is Flock's own website as of last night. 42%. Let's be generous and round that up to 50%. 50% of Flock's customers, city police, county sheriff, 50% of Flock's customers recovered half of the stolen vehicles in their jurisdiction. Sounds impressive, doesn't it? Until you look at the National Insurance Crime Bureau, NICB. They've been around for ages. NICB, this is their 2023 report about crime in 2022. The National Insurance Crime Bureau reported in 2023 that more than 85% of passenger vehicles reported stolen in 2022 were subsequently recovered by law enforcement. More than 85%? So nationwide, the national average, 85% of stolen cars are recovered. And Flock is bragging, 42% of our customers are getting 50%. What's the problem? You're way below national average. I would not be bragging that your customers are recovering half as many cars as your non-customers. And then what's the median time for recovery? 34% of stolen cars are recovered within one day. And this is as of 2022. So when you think about the number of Flock cameras that have gone up over the last 4 years, you can't count those. As of 2022, 85% of cars are recovered, 34% of them are recovered within one day, 50% are recovered within 2 days. And so my whole point is, do we really need all of these cameras for recovering cars? And that led me to my next question. How many cars are stolen in the United States every year? Well, glad I asked. This is from the FBI's Uniform Crime Report. And this goes all the way back to 2004. In 2004, the number of vehicles reported stolen in the United States was 1.23 million. Again, let's just call it 1.25 million cars reported stolen in the United States. Those numbers came down significantly until COVID. 2020, we see a spike, and then we see that it's dropped back to about where we were pre-COVID. This data goes through 2025. What Flock likes to do is, let's take 2023, 24, and 25, those last 3 years. Hey, look, that's us. Our cameras are responsible for this drop in stolen cars. No. We are returning to where we were pre-COVID. And one of the reasons that so many cars are being recovered now, again, I've done research on this. I haven't put all of my data into these slides. This would be a 6-hour presentation. But one of the reasons that so many cars are being recovered is vehicle telematics. In 2000, 0.3% of new cars made had vehicle telematics built into them, meaning as the owner of the car, you can go online and see where your car is, or General Motors knows where your car is. They've been sued for sharing that information. But as of last year, over 90% of new cars sold last year had vehicle telematics in it. It's very common today. If you're driving a car that's 5 years old or newer, you probably have an app where you can pull it out and look and see exactly where your car is. And even if you're driving an old car, for $25, you can put an AirTag in it and then pull out your phone and see exactly where your car is. The point is, motor vehicle theft has been dropping for a long time. We did see a spike around COVID, as we saw a spike in many other types of crime. But the idea that we need all of these cameras for motor vehicle theft is really stretching things. The number of cars stolen is half what it used to be. 85% of what's being stolen is being recovered. So tell me again why we all have to give up our privacy to go out and recover 15% of cars that aren't being recovered already, especially when anyone worried about their car can go drop an AirTag in it for $25. I have used the term before, open air prison. And I'm not given to hyperbole. When I describe an open air prison, that means somebody knows where you are 24/7. just like a prison exercise yard. Yeah, I don't see any bars there. You're not stuck in a cell. You can see the sky overhead. Yeah, that's pretty much an open-air prison. You can't go anywhere. You're monitored all the time. But as I started thinking about this analogy to open-air prisons and thinking about the nonstop surveillance that we're under, one other thought came to mind. As a professor, I have to go through federally mandated training called the Ethical Conduct of Research Involving Human Subjects. And this training, it's federally mandated. Research on human subjects doesn't mean sticking needles in people. It is as simple as doing a survey. If I want to do a survey, I have to do so ethically. And these laws were passed in 1974. It was the 1974 National Research Act passed by Congress that requires any university receiving federal money, which is all public universities, that they have to follow these rules for doing research. Here's my example. If I were to walk over to Brian and say, Brian, would you be willing to take a survey? And he just nodded. Brian's willing to take a survey. So imagine as soon as he says yes, I haul back and I punch him in the face as hard as I can. Brian, on a scale of 1 to 5, how bad did that hurt? And the whole point is, did I have his consent to punch him? He said yes. Well, he said yes to taking a survey. He didn't know taking the survey meant getting punched in the face. The whole point is informed consent. I have to give my informed consent, and this prevents people from taking advantage of me. And informed consent is a huge topic. We're going to come back to this in just a moment. But the other thing that all of this surveillance reminds me of was one of the research studies done in 1971 that prompted Congress to pass the National Research Act in 1974. It was called the Stanford Prison Experiment. This was an experiment. About 24 college-age males were selected. They were psychologically screened to make sure we didn't have any closet psychopaths among the group. They were psychologically screened, and then they were randomly assigned to either be a guard or a prisoner. In the basement of the Stanford psychology building, they set up a mock prison. And the students were supposed to do this for 2 weeks. They were being paid $15 a day. They're supposed to do this experiment over the course of 2 weeks, but after 6 days, the experiment was canceled because it was becoming brutal. The guards were becoming very brutal, physically violent with the inmates. And part of what was set up in this experiment was the guards, even though this is indoors, they were issued mirrored sunglasses. What's the significance of that? Mirrored sunglasses? You don't know who I'm looking at. I'm watching you, but you can't watch me. Kind of like when I put 135,000 cameras out along the highway, I can watch you, you can't watch me. Who's watching this? A couple of weeks ago, I was in Dunwoody, Georgia. I interviewed the wife of a police officer whose license plate number was run multiple times during her divorce. And she told me what it feels like today driving by flock cameras. She told me about wanting to stay home when her friends invite her out. She has to fight the urge to say no because she really doesn't like leaving her house. Flock is now making drones. Her ex-husband is still with the police department. She said, I had to put up thicker curtains because I know he has access to drones. Now, is there proof that he has ever used drones to circle her house? No. But that's the point. Once the trust has been violated, once you have been a victim of stalking, now your mind goes to places that are pretty logical. If the person who stalked me with license plate readers has access to drones, is it possible they could use them? Oh, no, there's safeguards in place to prevent that from happening. Yeah. All of this is being done under the guise of public safety. And I want to remind people, because there's a lot of you in this room younger than me, and you may or may not know this. what has been done under the guise of public safety in the United States. We're not talking about Nazi Germany, we're talking about in the United States. Executive Order 9066. This was signed by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Instructions to all persons of Japanese ancestry. For public safety during World War II, the president decided to instruct the Secretary of War. 1947, it became Department of Defense, but Department of War has been used a lot here lately. FDR instructed the Secretary of War to use all means necessary, that's a scary term, use all means necessary to gather and relocate Americans of Japanese ancestry. What had they done wrong? Well, they chose the wrong ancestors. If they had chosen Canadian ancestors or English or French ancestors, they would have been fine. But these people were dumb enough to choose Japanese ancestors. That was their crime. So they had to be rounded up for public safety. 70,000 American citizens of Japanese ancestry, plus about another 50,000 non-citizens of Japanese ancestry, were rounded up. And what strikes me is I recently read Executive Order 9066. It sounds like we're doing them a favor, because the Secretary of War was instructed to provide them with transportation to new housing facilities. Wow, that sounds nice. You don't get to take your car with you. You're going to abandon your house. You're going to abandon your furniture. You're going to abandon your business. You're going to abandon anything that does not fit in a suitcase. Now, you are allowed 2 suitcases per person, but you have a matter of a couple of hours to get everything that you want to take with you and get your butt in that bus, because we got a new place for you to live. It's not real luxurious. It's out in the middle of a salt plain, or out in the middle of the desert. But we have new accommodations for you, and we're not even going to charge you for this. This was done in the name of public safety. Some people know, because of the movie Karate Kid, some people know that we did this to Americans of Japanese ancestry. The numbers are smaller, but we also did it to Americans of German and Italian ancestry. You can't be too safe. And if it means trashing people's constitutional rights, the right to a jury by trial, the Fourth Amendment, if it means trashing everyone's rights, well, hey, this is a matter of public safety. We have to do it. And that leads me to what I want to spend my remaining time talking about. Dr. Benjamin Franklin, one of our founding fathers, he holds a special place in our history because he is one of only 6 men who signed both the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. He said, "Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither." Now, obviously, the context of what he said wasn't talking about flock cameras, but the principle is timeless. Dr. Franklin was part of the Committee of Five. If you study American history, April 19th, 1776 was the day the shot heard round the world was fired. The British were coming to take the gunpowder at Concord. The colonists showed up with weapons to prevent that from happening. To this day, we don't know for sure who fired that first shot, but that was the opening shot of the American Revolution, April 19th, 1776. 2 months later, the Continental Congress is meeting, and they decide we are going to formally announce we are declaring our independence from Great Britain. Rather than 56 men trying to write a document, they appointed a committee of 5. Dr. Franklin and Thomas Jefferson were among the 5 men appointed. Historians tell us that Thomas Jefferson wrote about 80% of the Declaration of Independence, but Dr. Franklin made some substantial contributions to it. This famous painting shows the Committee of 5 handing the Declaration of Independence to John Hancock, who is seated. He is the president of the Continental Congress. John Hancock is most famous for writing his name larger than everyone else. He was the first signer of the Declaration of Independence. What I want to do for the next couple of minutes is just go over the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. It begins with, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Self-evident is a mathematical term. That term came from Dr. Franklin. In addition to being an author, an inventor, a statesman, he was also a mathematician. In mathematics, if A equals B, B equals A, that is self-evident. It is so obvious, I don't have to explain it any further. And that's the way Dr. Franklin said these truths are. These truths are self-evident. Everyone should be able to see this. So let's quickly look at these truths. That all men are created equal. To be intellectually honest, not everyone that signed this document lived up to it. Some of the people who signed the document were slave owners. They failed to live up to this truth. Doesn't mean the truth is wrong, it means people failed to live up to it. That they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Our rights don't come from government, our rights come from our Creator. The third self-evident truth, the one that I wish every elected and appointed government official lived by, that to secure these rights, you know those rights we just talked about that came from our Creator? To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. I want you to imagine for just a moment if I put on the Infinity Gauntlet from the Marvel Cinematic Universe and I do the Thanos snap, but when I snap my fingers, it's the federal government, the state government, the county, the city government, they just fade away. What happens over the next 72 hours?
Chaos.
We will have a government. It might not be an elected government. My best guess is it would probably be cartels. But we will have a government. To secure our rights, we institute a government. We want people in place to protect our rights. And this is not some fringe theory. 56 men signed the Declaration of Independence saying they believe this, but this was a very mainstream belief back then. 12 years after the Declaration of Independence was signed, the U.S. Constitution was sent to the states for ratification. Patrick Henry, a state representative from Virginia, argued adamantly that Virginia should remain its own country. They should not join the Union of States. The pro-Union argument, the other people in Virginia that wanted to join the United States, they were making arguments along the lines of, Virginia doesn't have the clout that 13 states combined would. And so if we're trying to negotiate a trade treaty with Canada or France or Germany, we don't have enough negotiating power. We would be better off financially to join the Union, and then 13 states could negotiate better terms. Patrick Henry said, "You are not to inquire how your trade may be increased, nor how you are to become a great and powerful people, but how your liberties can be secured, for liberty ought to be the direct end of your government." The following day, as the debate continued, he said, "Guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect everyone that approaches that jewel. Unfortunately, nothing will preserve it but downright force. Whenever you give up that force, you are inevitably ruined." Let's do a quick thought experiment. Imagine it's 2 a.m., you're at home laying in bed, and you are awakened by the sound of somebody trying to get into the back door of your house. How many of you are going to say, It's probably just the neighbor. He probably got confused and went to my back door rather than his back door. It's fine. I'm just going back to sleep. Anyone? Some of you may call 911. Some of you may reach for 1911. But the point is, no one's going back to sleep. When somebody's trying to get in the back door of my house at 2 a.m., I do not give them benefit of doubt. I am going to assume the worst. And that's what Patrick Henry is saying here. Anyone that approaches the public liberty, you don't say, well, they probably have good intentions, just ignore it, it'll be fine. He says, they're a suspect. And so when I see cameras going up everywhere, monitoring everything we do, I'm suspicious. I believe the words of Patrick Henry. I want to go back to the Declaration of Independence and finish that third self-evident truth. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Now, we talked about consent a minute ago. How many of you consented to 135,000 license plate readers going up across the country? Now, the other side will make an argument. You elected the mayor. You elected the sheriff. You delegated to them the ability to make these decisions. It's not the same thing. If I voted for a mayor and the mayor wanted to bring back slavery, would I say, oh, well, that's okay. We elected him. We got to do whatever he says. No. We have a system in place to try and prevent something like that from happening. It's called the U.S. Constitution. The Fourth Amendment in particular says the right of the people to be secure in their papers, houses, persons, and effects shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, describing in particular the person or place to be searched or the person to be seized. Notice the flow. No warrant shall issue but upon probable cause. It doesn't say go search to find probable cause. It says no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause. I have to have a reason to believe this person committed this crime, and I can take that limited evidence to a judge and say, Judge, I know this is not conclusive. This is not enough to convict them. But here's my reason for believing this person committed this crime. Will you give me permission to go do a search because I think I will find additional evidence that will convict them? And then it's up to a judge. Keep in mind, the police officer is part of the executive branch. The judge is part of the judicial branch. This was an intentional check and balance put in place by our founding fathers to divide the power of government. I want this branch of government overseeing this branch of government. What Flock and their competitors have done is they've completely bypassed an entire branch of government. Hey, if you think someone might be guilty, here's a database you can go search, no warrant required. You've just bypassed. You basically outsourced spying. Self-evident truth number four. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Those are powerful words, and I am not saying we are there yet. I am not calling for revolution. When the Declaration of Independence was being written, they were calling for revolution. They are getting ready to list 37 specific charges against the king, saying, because of all these reasons, we have hit the point, there's no reconciliation, we are declaring ourselves independent. We have the right to alter or abolish it. Governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And all evidence has shown mankind is more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right them. All that's saying is we have a long fuse. We're probably not going to go out and overreact. But I want you to do a little thought experiment with me. I'm going to describe a country, and I want you to tell me who I'm talking about. This is a country that keeps a database of everywhere its citizens fly and a database of everywhere its citizens drive and a database of everything its citizens purchase with credit cards and a database of who is physically around who based on what electronic devices are on them or in them. We'll come back to that one in a minute. And a database of everything that they're citizens post online and maintains a database of 30 billion photos so that they can identify people walking down the street with facial recognition. If I describe that country, who am I talking about?
It's us, but I would say China.
Yep, 5 years ago, most people would have said China. China, between 2005 and 2006, China let a bunch of contracts to build what they call the Golden Shield. The Golden Shield is their AI-powered surveillance infrastructure. Guess who got those contracts? Oracle, Cisco, a few other US companies. Palantir was only 2 or 3 years old in 2000. Palantir started in 2003, so they were 2 or 3 years old when these contracts were being let. I don't think they got any of the Chinese contracts. But the whole point is, the companies that built China's Golden Shield are American companies. China got the prototype. We're getting the industrial version, the production version. So we have seen flock cameras in particular spread, and I want to be real careful here. It's not just flock. Axon, Motorola, Leonardo, flock has a lot of competitors, but flock is certainly the 800-pound gorilla of ALPRs. Now here's what I consider the better news. 7 US cities rejected flock between 2001 and between 2021 and 2024. Rejected meaning they let their contract expire without renewing or they terminated their contract. 7 cities in 4 years. Then 2025 hit. Those color codes are quarters. The fourth quarter of 2025, flock lost 25 contracts. Now, I want you to pay attention to this timing. We're going to come back to this in just a second. But you can see the knee of the curve. Fourth quarter 2025, flock loses 25 contracts in the quarter. You want to see what 2026 is shaping up like? This is through this morning. 143 cities have rejected flock. Here's the data. 136,000 license plate readers around the country have been identified by DFLOC, and 143 cities have canceled their contracts or let their contracts expire, Los Angeles being one of them. Now, I want to go back to something here. I said the knee of the curve, when did the floodgates of opposition open? It was the fourth quarter of 2025. I have a friend that lives in Dunwoody, Georgia. His name is Jason Hunyar. I refer to him as the Jedi Master of Open Records Request. He has sent over 200 open records requests to the city of Dunwoody, Georgia, and a few other entities, including the Attorney General of Georgia. I have a feeling they don't like him. It says a lot about a person when you know who their enemies are. Anyway, what I'm going to share with you here is one thing that Jason found in his open records request. That was a meeting invitation to a meeting held at the Dunwoody Real-Time Crime Center on February 12th of this year. So fourth quarter 2025 is when the crisis hits. If you're flock, that was a crisis that started in the fourth quarter of last year when you lost 25 contracts in one quarter. More than you had lost since you had been a company. That meeting at the Real-Time Crime Center in Dunwoody, Georgia, there were a couple of people from flock invited to the meeting. There were a couple of people from the city of Dunwoody invited to the meeting. That makes perfect sense. But there were a bunch of other people invited to the meeting whose email addresses were targetedvictory.com and 6amstrategies.com. Why are these people going to the Real-Time Crime Center to meet with flock and police officers? Well, this is targetedvictory.com. Anyone want to guess who they are? A Washington, D.C.-based crisis management PR firm. Activating the world one issue at a time, the future of advocacy is here. I'm going to read a couple of excerpts from this. This is targetedvictory.com, how they describe themselves on their website. We bring a unique network of public relations operatives, their word, not mine, We bring a unique network of public relations operatives to drive activations and manage communications in any market from a single city to all 50 states. Our teams can be ready within 48 hours, scaling up or down each month based on your campaign's needs and budget. These teams consist of former journalists and communication experts chosen based on your specific goals. Our network of over 1,000 local operatives has built campaigns for clients that raise awareness and build support for brands, products, issues, and causes. As well-known members of their local communities, these community leaders can identify and reach key stakeholders, policymakers, and potential employees in an authentic way. Because nothing is more authentic than going out and hiring corporate shills to spread your message. This is an authentic connection. This allows you to have local partners who provide boots on the ground for interviews, events, activations, and intelligence gathering. Intelligence gathering? Sounds like a military operation. They also have deep relationships with local media outlets and know how to drive stories in their market that not only get placed, but get noticed. Why do you think they are pointing out their local operatives include former journalists? What does virtually every newsroom in the country have in common? They're understaffed. I did a search online about newsrooms downsizing, and it's everywhere. Newsrooms have been downsizing like crazy. And so if you are an editor and you have one-third the number of reporters you used to have, and a former journalist turned corporate shill goes out and writes a puff piece about how fantastic Flock is, and they bring it to you and it's print ready. Here you go, no charge, you're welcome. That's probably gonna make the paper because they need content. And this is free content written to journalistic standards. So that's who TargetedVictory.com is. Does anyone want to guess what 6 a.m. Strategies is? Lo and behold, they are another Washington, D.C.-based crisis management public relations firm. And I won't take the time to read all of their statements, but Jason Hunyar, I encourage you to follow him on Substack. Jason Hunyar wraps it up this way. They are describing a single operation, manufacture local trust, generate community level cover, and deploy it on behalf of corporate clients. Their documented track record, the one the Washington Post reported on in 2022, is doing exactly that through planted op-eds, recruited voices, and seeded stories. That's not speculation, that's their own words and their own history. So in other words, as hundreds of thousands of regular Americans have started going out and attending city council meetings and county council meetings and trying to use the democratic process to say, we do not give our consent. Remember what we read in the Declaration of Independence, governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. As hundreds of people show up at individual city and county council meetings saying, we do not consent to this, we want these cameras taken down. What Flock is doing is going out and hiring thousands of local operatives to show up at these meetings and say, I like these cameras. If you're not doing anything wrong, what are you worried about? And let me address that real quick, because I hear this all the time. If you're not doing anything wrong, why do you care? When you say not doing anything wrong, you mean like leaving my house without permission? Has anyone forgotten that 5 years ago we were ordered to stay home? I haven't forgotten. I didn't follow it then, I won't follow it next time. And yes, there will be a next time. But I ignored it. The difference is 5 years ago when I was ignoring it, I went out with impunity. Today, as soon as I leave my house, the next time we're ordered to stay home, Flock is going to be ratting me out. Hey, he left his house without permission. So if you're not doing anything wrong, okay, if you are the type of person that is going to kneel and kiss the boots of anyone in office who says, you can't go to work, you can't go to the grocery store, you can't leave your house. If that's the world you want to live in, more power to you. May your chains set lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that you were once our countrymen. Okay, I'm running out of time. I'm going to be real quick on this. This year, and this is why all of this matters, this year in Florida, this man, Florida State Representative Danny Alvarez, introduced a bill in the Florida legislature. It was called House Bill 945. The bill dealt with a new term called an adversary intelligence entity. I use the term enemy of the state because it means the same thing. Danny defined a new group of people who are enemies of the state. He used a different term, adversary intelligence entity, which is defined in the bill he introduced as any government, non-governmental organization, corporation, business, group, cell, entity, or person. One person can be an adversary intelligence entity. Or person whose demonstrated actions, views, or beliefs are a threat to or are inimical, just means harmful, to the interest of the state. Let that sink in. If this had become law, and by the way, this passed three House committees before it stopped. Three different House committees in Florida said this ought to be law. It finally stopped after the third one passed it. But if this had become law, if you hold views or opinions that are deemed harmful to the interest of the state, you become an adversary intelligence entity. And what does that mean? Well, the Domestic Security Task Force is instructed in the same bill to identify you as a threat. And how do they do that? Pattern of life data. Now, I have a very inquisitive mind. My first question, what are the interests of the state? Because until 2 years ago, I could have sworn reducing our CO2 emissions were part of the interests of the state. And I don't want to get into the global warming debate. That's a separate issue. But would everyone agree that it seemed like 2 years ago, it was a national priority that we wanted to reduce our CO2 emissions? And about 2 years ago, Bill Gates, who I would nominate for hypocrite of the century, Bill Gates pronounced global warming's no longer an issue. Yeah, it's going to get a little bit warmer, but we're adaptable, and it's really not that big of a deal. We'll deal with it. That's not what you said for the past 25 years. Why did you suddenly, what study did you cite to decide that this is not really a big deal? Well, there's not really a new study on it. Data just occurs to him. Bill Gates decided that global warming's not a threat, coincidentally, about the same time that Microsoft decided it needed another 10 gigawatts of power for its data centers. I'm sure those things are totally unrelated, just a coincidence that the timing was so close. But my first question is, what are the interests of the state? The second question is, who gets to decide? Is it the governor that gets to decide the interest of the state? Because I'm pretty sure Governor DeSantis and Governor Newsom would have very different lists of what's in the interest of the state. The second question is, if they want to criminalize holding opinions that are harmful to the interest of the state, how do they know what those interests are? How do they know what your views and opinions are? Well, that's where the pattern of life data comes in. If I drive by a signal trace, and by the way, this is what they look like. A square white panel on a pole. Not every square white panel on a pole is a signal trace. They intentionally made them look like things you're accustomed to seeing so that it wouldn't draw attention. But some of those square white panels are signal trace. And when you drive by them, it's going to capture the unique identifier off of your AirPods, off of your Apple Watch, off of your cell phone. If you have hearing aids, you got a Bluetooth signal in your hearing aids. If you have a pacemaker, if you have a glucose monitor, if you have an insulin pump, any electronic device on you or in you is going to be cataloged and tied to your license plate. And after you've driven by 30 of these things and they see these group of electronic signatures associated with your license plate, it's a pretty good bet these are my AirPods because they are consistently seen in my car with my license plate. Now let's just imagine after the conference tomorrow, my car doesn't start and Brian gives me a ride somewhere. Now, when Brian drives by a signal trace, my devices are seen inside of Brian's car. Make a note of that. John and Brian know each other. We saw them together. Hey, they must know each other real well because we've seen John's devices in Brian's car 14 times over the last month. They must know each other really well. This is building a database of personal relationships. Who knows who is with who travels together. This is a search. Remember the Fourth Amendment. Probable cause is needed before you do a search. I would love to have the time to get into the Carpenter case and the Chattery case that the Supreme Court just decided, but if you're interested in that, catch me at the back of the room sometime today or tomorrow, but don't have time to get into that today. Flock tried to do a partnership with Ring because they can't get enough data. They wanted a partnership with Ring. They tried to do a partnership with Lyft and Uber to get dash cam video streaming into Flock as well. Last thing, and I'll just leave you with this. I have made a concerted effort to stop calling them Flock Safety. Number one, that is not their legal name. The company is Flock Group. Their patent is for a dynamic surveillance network. Flock Safety is only the name of their website. Flock Group is their legal name. Their patent is for a dynamic surveillance network. That is why I always refer to them as Flock Surveillance. It is a more appropriate name because that's what they patented, surveillance, not safety. And with that, I'm out of time. Thank you for your attention today, and I look forward to speaking with you over the next 2 days as you participate here in the conference. Thank you.